We're also now at the part of our agenda where we'll hear from Judicial Council members' liaison reports. I believe we have approximately six reports, starting with Justice Judith Ashman Gerst reporting on Ventura County.
Thank you. Before I start with my report on Ventura, I just want to say that, you know, it's really important for everyone here and listening in to focus on the fact that the technology efforts are coming from the trial courts, with the assistance of the AOC, but it's not being imposed on the trial courts. The task force, again, comes from the courts. There are members of the bar, members from the trial courts, and myself to focus on the courts of appeal and, of course, to keep everybody honest. So now moving on to Ventura. I went to Ventura on April 17th, where I joined the judges and the commissioners of the Ventura Superior Court at their monthly meeting. And their technology does allow for video participation by their bench officers who sit in their juvenile court facility, so they were also at the meeting. PJ Brian Back noted that the CME court, unfortunately due to budget constraints, is now only open 2 days a week. They handle traffic arraignments there, traffic trials, and UDs. They had a full agenda of discussion matters at their meeting. They have a new court rule about photography and recording and broadcasting in court, and that was based on a very high-profile trial resentencing that they had recently. The parole issue, as mentioned by Judge Jarre, did come up. As we know, July 1st is the date for courts, the trial courts to begin handling the parole revocation matters. So this really resulted in a vibrant discussion with concerns expressed about judges becoming parole agents and dealing with serious felons when they feel there's no real teeth in sentencing alternatives. They recognize that the impact of the new rule and the new role is unknown. They have absolutely no idea what the budget is going to permit. Are they going to be able to hire a bench officer to handle these matters? They really obviously don't know. Their DA has also indicated that if there's a new case filed based on if there's a new case and there's an arrest, he's going to proceed with a new case. He's not going to go a revocation route. So the Ventura criminal bench is certainly concerned that this is going to increase their caseload, and again, you know, they really don't know what that's going to look like. One of the judges did express concern about the council's role in the realignment and parole issues and would encourage the council to somehow get involved and try to help resolve some of these issues. As expected, the budget was on the agenda. They indicated that their fund balance is actually better than they had anticipated because of some relief that was provided by the council. But the focus was on what could be kept, what could be spent, the ongoing issue of furlough days, which they have had for a long time in Ventura, and the hope that maybe they could eliminate them in the future. As Judge Herman has mentioned, Ventura is one of the V3 courts, and they are one of the two courts that would like to add family and juvenile cases to V3. They noted that their system has crashed several times, and they feel that there's a risk of it crashing permanently. Their exec, Mike Planet, questions whether funding for the current V3 cases will be pulled. He noted that his IT group is considering off-the-shelf products, leveraging with other V3 courts, or various other solutions. I also explained what the new technology task force was doing and what our plans were. Several of the judges are new appointees, so we discussed the issue of mandatory education. Their new appointees both indicated that they really liked in-person programs. They found significant benefit to the interaction with other new judges. Several of the members of the bench are very active in CJA, and they suggested that CJA was willing to step up. Their education activities could collaborate on programs and would try to ensure that there wasn't a duplication of efforts. Finally, they told me that the court has been reaching out to its local city council members, mayors, chambers of commerce, to educate them on the effects of the budget cuts to the judiciary and would encourage those kinds of ground-up activities. As of last time, they could not have been more gracious and informative, It was a pleasure to assure them that with the liaison program that they have a voice on the council. So thank you very much for creating this program.
Thank you, Justice Ashman Gerst. We'll hear now from Presiding Judge Lori Earle.
Thank you, Chief. On April 9th, I traveled to the Sutter Superior Court and met with their Presiding Judge Susan Green and Court Executive Officer Mary Beth Todd and three of their other judicial officers. They have a total of six judicial officers in Sutter County. Sutter County, their Superior Court sits in Yuba City, not to be confused with Yuba County. About Yuba County's courthouse is within a mile from where the Sutter County Courthouse sits. They have two facilities in Sutter County, which are right across the street from each other, although they have a new courthouse construction project that would, when up and running, would obviate the need of those two buildings, which are currently leased county buildings. And I'll get more into their construction project in a moment. We talked quite a bit about their budget situation and the impact that recent reductions have had on their budget. Since fiscal year 2008, they have seen, as they go into fiscal year 13-14, a 23% reduction in their court budget, and they're at a 20% vacancy rate for their court right now. They've tried a number of things and taken a number of steps to alleviate that, as we all have. They've reduced hours of operations at their front counters. They've extended a voluntary separation program to their employees. Their management employees are on furloughs. They've unfortunately seen a significant reduction in the resources to their self-help center at a time when the needs and complexity of self-help of self-represented litigants is increasing. So we talked a great deal about that, and we talked also a great deal about what is this new budget methodology anyways, and is it going to help us? And we had a discussion about the work of our subcommittee as well as the work of the trial court funding working group and explain the distinctions, the differences, and the relationship between the two. We also, Sutter County has been very resourceful, though, even though in the midst of this crisis they've come up with some good solutions for how they do things, not surprisingly technology-related. They, at this point, have all of their traffic matters, infraction matters, are electronic, and it's kind of a paper-on-demand system. They have a document imaging program. They have a pretty robust enhanced collections program. They are also one of the courts that is serviced by the Riverside Superior Court for procurement services, which they have found to work quite well for them. I indicated that they also have a construction project, the new Yuba Courthouse, which has working drawings, architectural drawings that are have already been prepared. They, back in October of last year, in light of the further cuts to SB 1407 funds, they appeared before the Courthouse Cost Reduction Subcommittee to see if there were perhaps reductions to their project, their cost reductions that they could engage in. And while they felt understood the necessity of it, I would have to say that it was not without frustration, I think, that experience for them. And they had some good, I think, suggestions for how that subcommittee might improve the manner in which it analyzes cost reductions. They felt that there was not really any specific standards or guidelines on how reductions were decided. They noted that they were invited to attend. The goal was an 8% reduction in their project. They walked away with a 15% reduction, but I don't think that was the source of their frustration. I think the source of their frustration was that it was a public dialogue until the point of deliberations when it was a closed session, and then they felt that they were somewhat locked out of the process. So they do have some suggestions for how to improve that, and would be happy, I think, to speak with any of us on that. Mainly, I think the process should be more transparent in their opinion, but overall, it was a good meeting. I enjoyed my time with them, and they are a very collegial group, which was nice to see.
Thank you, Presiding Judge Earle. Next, we'll hear from Judge Emily Elias.
Well, I went last Friday on the 19th to
the Imperial County Court. To give you an idea where that is, it's 10 miles north of the Mexican border and 50 miles west of Yuma. It is one of the furthest, I think, probably from San Francisco you can get. They have 10 judicial officers, 10 judges, and 1.5 commissioners. They have a part-time 1058 commissioner. I met with the presiding judge and with the executive officer, and then I had lunch with the rest of the judicial officers that were available, and I took a tour of some of their facilities. They have an interesting location there. They have 60% of their county works for the government, which makes, they said, jury selection easy, but is a different situation. They have 2 state prisons located in their county. They also have a significant number of highway patrol there because of their location. They said, the highest number of infractions in the state, and that's because they have all these overweight trucks and speeding on Highway 8. And so there are many, many highway patrol officers located there. They also have, well, their county has a population of about 178,000 people. They estimate that about 6,000 people a day come across from different borders to work in the in El Centro and in Calexico and that. And so they have a significant daytime population, and then that goes home at night. They said some of the people working for the court even live across the border. So their population is really does not reflect the total number of people that they service. They have an historic courthouse that's in El Centro. That's where I started off visiting with them. There was a big earthquake there 3 years ago. The courthouse still has plastic up and scaffolding. Apparently the scaffolding was put up after the earthquake, and none of the work has been done on the building. And so it still sits there. They did finally get one of the stairways opened up so you can go up the main stairway. They also have other locations. I visited 2 that were in interesting locations. They have the county jail and juvenile hall are located next to each other. Both of those have what they call hearing rooms. I guess we would call them courtrooms, but obviously there's no room for a jury box. And those courtrooms were probably 25 by 25 feet. There's no security. While the juveniles are coming in from the back to get into the courtroom, the family members waiting to see there and to participate are in a waiting room of which all of the juveniles have to walk right by them within arm's reach. And with regard to the arraignment court located in the jail, they finally have a wand to wand people down who are coming in to watch the proceedings. There are no metal detectors. They also have a rental building, a lease building, that they're very concerned about because this is one of those leases that was signed by the AOC for them, and that they're concerned now that with the no reserves, how they're going to make the payments. The idea is they make the payments and how that's going to happen, and the lease only runs for another few years. In anticipation of the lease running out, they purchased land, which they also showed me the vacant land near downtown, in which to build a 6-quart courthouse, and there's no money now. I think they have plans and everything, but it's still a vacant lot, and they're concerned when the lease runs out and where are they going to put everybody, because what they are doing to try to save money is they are going to close the arraignment court in the jail and the juvenile facility, and they're also closing their branch out in Calexico, and those I noticed are in our materials as being announced as closing. So that's where they are. We discussed the Judicial Council and the Administrative Office of the Court. They seem to be happy with the services that were provided. They use CJR. They like CJR. They use court counsel. And they also utilize assigned judges. In fact, the assigned judge they have there right now is somebody that I was a seminar leader at the college. That's 20 years ago. Anyhow, he's still there doing that. And for technology, they're using Sustain, but they are on the Windows version of Sustain. They do have everything on the one case management system. They've only had to lay off 2 people. Those were specific jobs, but they showed me a big chart that they have to show all the attrition. So they're just losing people and have lost a significant amount of their staff. Other than that, they seem to be pleased with everything going on. They are supportive of the realignment of the allocations, and it was a very pleasant visit. Thank you, Judge Elias. Judge Jackson?
Yes. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to dash out. I've just been informed I have a grand jury that returned an indictment, so I'll make this real quick. I should also, before I talk about my visit to San Mateo, I am also the liaison for NJO, and I just want to briefly say that it's been, along with Judge Jarr, I've gone to all of them for the last year. And the last two I can remember was one was where we had a new associate justice for the first district who was a participant, and that was very good to meet him and to talk to him about the process. And then this last NJO, we had a visiting judicial officer from Japan, and it was interesting that, one, he didn't understand why our court system is going through the budget problems in view of the fact of our importance and we being the third branch. And he also shared with me, in Japan, they just implemented a jury system, modeling themselves somewhat after the United States, but their jury composition is made up of the majority are judges, and the other are laypersons. And I asked him, do you have very many hung juries? He said, no. Why would we? You know, because of the judges. So I thought that was interesting. But nevertheless, on March 8th, I went to visit San Mateo, my hometown, and Jim Fox can relate to this. So it was great to see many of my former colleagues and friends who I still am around. And it was a very lively, robust, and informative meeting. First and foremost, the consensus of the bench, they wanted the council to know what San Mateo is going through. Their northern branch, which serves a heavy concentration, and Jim Fox, you can relate to this, they're closing their northern branch only to hear preliminary hearings. So that means there's small claims in their traffic court. And for that matter, just their jury pool, which comes from mostly the northern part of the county, they're now going to have to travel to Redwood City. And if you can just think, when you have a jury crawl, which I just got my summons, so I do know, you have to be there at 8:30 in the morning. And if you happen to be taking public transportation, which many of the people from the northern part of the county are doing, that's a two-hour bus ride to be there at 8:30 in the morning one way. So they are very concerned about what that's going to do for their jury participation, those who have traffic, small claims, and other litigation. They're also the bench wish for me to stress how they are now, as of July, all but two of their commissioners. So they're concerned about that. And the ongoing problems that their bench, as well as all the benches, are confronting, and they wish for me to stress that if there is any additional monies, that it can be directed to the trial courts to service our end users. As you know, with this liaison, it's a round table, and it was very informative. And so there's no filters, and, of course, my representation as probably all of our representation, whatever you wish to raise, any judge, you're welcome to raise it. So one of the judges raised the issue about whether or not members could be voted in onto the council. And I explained that requires a constitutional amendment. And more importantly, that is the constitutional authority of our Chief Justice. And to have voting members on would greatly impair the authority that has been granted upon our chief to appoint appointment powers. Another issue was the I discussed how RUPRO, the executive and planning and technology, we were looking at many of our advisory committees to see if some have sunsetted, some can be merged with others. And one of the judges made a recommendation who happened to sit on the, I believe, civil and small claims, that another in this process of reducing the advisory committees, if the council would consider reducing or if not eliminating support staff from the AOC. And the recommendation by that particular judge was that the judges can do the research. another judge raised the issue about traffic and the fines and whether or not the council could sponsor special legislation in order for the fines that are being collected by the particular court to remain with the courts. Another judge asked, did I know what the composition, not the composition, but the organization makeup of the judicial council members? For instance, how many, they specifically I was asked, How many Alliance members are on the council? With that, my response was, I don't know. We don't discuss our organizations or memberships, and I started to rattle off, I think, at least 13 organizations I'm a member of, and so that is not an issue. Then there was an question regarding the telecommuting. And one of the – let me back up in view of the fact that the committee or organization composition, they asked if their – one judge asked if the Alliance could have a seat at the council as well, similar to the CJA. And my response was there are various other organizations as well. So, you know, that was what was raised. And then the question was about the telecommuting. One judge asked why did we disregard the SEC report on telecommuting. And I, at that point, informed them that SEC report, if I'm not mistaken, dealt with not adhering to our former telecommuting policy, and that the one that is now in place is much more restrictive, and it's a pilot program. Those were some of the issues raised by individual judges, not necessarily the reflection of all the other judges on the commission. In fact, I was informed that, you know, it's a round table. Everybody has a say. But what I was told by the presiding judges that they wish for me to stress is that, one, there are problems and budget constraints that are going on in San Mateo. Two, the big constraint is what's going to happen to the biggest population, which is in the northern part of the county, and being able to have access to our courts, which is down in Redwood City. And two, the methodology. At that time, we did not know what the methodology was going to be. I have since spoken to the presiding judge. He is well aware of it. In fact, Judge Freeman sits on the trial court allocation budget committee. And he understood, and we all are going to wait until the final product comes out. And with that being said, I also spoke to Santa Cruz. I did not have an opportunity to speak to San Bernardino, which I'm also a liaison with. And they, too, are looking to see the final result on the methodology and would like to have further input. So that's my report. The bottom line is I am very appreciative of, one, being able to go to NJO, two, going to the courts, and being able to bring back the information of what our judges are thinking throughout our state.
Thank you, Judge Jackson.
And on that note, I'm going to go take an indictment. I'll be right back.
Okay. Thank you. Judge Jacobson.
Thank you. Since our last council meeting, I had the opportunity to visit two courts, Contra Costa County and Marin County. On February 28th of this year, I went to Contra Costa County, and I met with Presiding Judge Barry Good in his chambers in Martinez. I have to note that he was very, very generous with his time with me. He was with me from 9 o'clock in the morning until 2 in the afternoon. For the morning part of it, we were joined by their CEO, Kerry Torrey. And over the lunch hour, Judge Good also gave me a tour of the court facilities in Martinez, which was very interesting completely. I was given a thorough rundown of their current situation. By way of an overview, Contra Costa County Superior Court is a medium-sized court with 46 authorized bench positions, 38 judges, and 8 commissioners. It's a court that has long had a reputation, certainly in our region, for being well-managed, business-like, and high-functioning. 4 years ago, this court had courthouses serving the citizens of Contra Costa County, Martinez, Pittsburgh, Richmond, Concord, and Walnut Creek. The court had 46 bench officers and 450 full-time employees. This court at that time provided robust, efficient, public service-oriented civil, family, juvenile, traffic courts, and self-help services. Now things are different. To quote Judge Good, the accumulation of 4 years of cuts has brought us to our knees. The budget crisis has required us to do the unthinkable, to deprive people of access to justice. In terms of court closures, that court has closed its Concord courthouse completely. It's shut all Walnut Creek operations with the exception of traffic matters. It's closed 1 of 6 family law departments, 1 of 5 civil departments. It closed juvenile courtrooms in Richmond and Pittsburgh, all juvenile cases are now heard in Martinez. To give you context for that, Richmond's 20 miles away and Pittsburgh 16 miles away. They've closed a family courtroom in Pittsburgh, also relocating those services to Martinez. They've reduced their child support DCSS court from 5 days a week to 4 days a week. In terms of the reduction in bench officers, the start of this year, the court let go most of its eight commissioners. They retained two commissioners and hired another at 80% time to cover the child support grant calendar. So they now have 2.8 commissioners. The court now has a total of 40 bench officers, down from the 46 authorized positions. The clerk's office has significantly reduced its services. It now closes at 1 o'clock each day. In terms of staff reductions since 2008, we've had approximately a 30% reduction in staff, from 450 full-time positions to 312. Included in this reduction, the court reorganized its administrative structure, and there's been a 40% reduction in their administrative staff. They've reduced court reporter services. The court no longer provides court reporters in civil, family, and probate. Again, to quote Judge Good, it's not that we don't need court reporters in these cases, we just can't afford them. In terms of self-help services, the court has cut self-help services by 50% and has had to institute a rule that a facilitator cannot spend more than 10 minutes with someone who may have waited hours and hours to see the facilitator. In terms of backlogs, they're noting that their backlog is growing at a frightening rate. The examples that Judge Good gave me were that they have more than 600 family law judgments waiting to be processed, more than 750 civil default judgments, more than 1,000 limited civil complaints, which are waiting to be filed. In terms of their infrastructure, the court's in dire need of replacing its antiquated and often dysfunctional phone system. Judge Good gave me some very specific examples of complaints that he's received and went on to state, again to quote him, "Our phone system has crashed and we're holding it together with the electronic equivalent of baling wire." He concludes, "You do not want to call our court." In terms of positives, the bench is strong, it's hardworking, it's committed. Their CEO is skilled, creative, and forward-thinking. They're in process of replacing their case management system. Currently, the court pays the county over $1 million a year on an antiquated system. They're now in process of migrating to a new system as part of I think it's ISD, if I have that correct, Judge Herman, a consortium of seven courts. The new system is going to cost them between $1 and $2 million, but will ultimately cost far less than the current costs, and they'll have a far better case management system in place as a result. The court has negotiated with unions a four-year labor contract that involves the court giving a small $500 bonus in the first year in exchange for 30 furlough days over the following 3 years, which is very good for their financial structure over that period of time. The court also enjoys good relationships with a strong and supportive local bar association. It's embarked on two noteworthy programs that they told me about in an effort to offset some of the loss of the services from the ongoing budget crisis. First is they offer training to local lawyers, and 70 lawyers showed up for this training to serve as pro tem judges in small claims cases. And this has allowed the court to use this labor pool to essentially outsource its small claims cases and some of its unlawful detainer caseload. Another separate group of local lawyers have signed up to serve as civil discovery facilitators, and the court now requires the parties to go through this informal mediation before filing discovery motions in court, and they're seeing good yield from that. On a final note, Judge Good particularly asked me to report back to the council about the great benefit his court receives ongoing from the AOC Office of Legal Services, and particularly asked me to mention three people that he has found particularly helpful over time: Bill Casserly, Lyle Nishimi, and Patty Williams. On April 5th, I had the pleasure of visiting Marin County. I met with CEO Kim Turner in her office in San Rafael. She also gave me a good deal of time on that day. I was with her from about 10 in the morning till about 3 in the afternoon. I was invited to join a Friday lunchroom meeting with several of the judges of that court, and I was able to enjoy lunch with Presiding Judge James Ritchie, Judge Verna Adams, Judge Terrence Boren, Judge Roy Chernus, Judge James Chu, Judge Kelly Simmons. Earlier in the day, I had the opportunity to touch base with Judge Lynn Duryea, and at an offsite function on another day, I got to visit with Judge Andrew Sweet. Presiding Judge Ritchie met with me for an hour after lunch, and Ms. Turner gave me a tour of the court's facilities to end the visit. Again, I was given a thorough rundown of their current situation. By way of an overview, Marin County Superior Court is a smaller size court with 15 authorized bench positions, 12 judges, and 3 commissioners. This court enjoys a reputation, well-earned reputation, for being well-managed, providing good service to its community, and also a reputation for being creative and innovative. 5 years ago, this court was in good financial shape. It had 177 full-time employees, including 14 court reporters. Among other things, the Marin County Superior Court had one of the best self-help clinics in California. Like almost everyone else in California, this court's been hit hard by repetitive years of budget cuts. In terms of court closures, this court has a somewhat unique situation that insulates it. Its operations, with one limited exception, are basically all in one courthouse, which is housed in the Marin County Civic Center, and they share space with county government offices. This has provided them, or protected them, from the wave of courthouse closures that we've seen across the state in the last couple of years. In an effort to adjust to budget shortfalls, the court has reorganized its criminal operations and reduced the number of courts dedicated to criminal from 7 to 5. In terms of the reduction in bench officers, the court has 3 authorized commissioner positions. One commissioner has just retired, and he will not be replaced. In addition, they have one judicial position that's been open for some time. The clerk's office hours have been reduced somewhat. The criminal clerk's office now closes at 3 in the afternoon, and the civil clerk's office now closes at 3:30. In terms of staff reductions, they've lost almost a third of their staff over the last 4 years, from 177 full-time employees to 119. In terms of court reporter reductions, they've gone from 14 full-time court reporters to 7. The court no longer provides court reporters in civil, family, and misdemeanor cases. The court continues to provide court reporters for felonies, LPS cases, juvenile, DV, and civil harassment cases. They continue to try when they can to provide reporters for civil and family law in motion. The court, again, going back to the single courthouse situation, they're able to take advantage of their single location with all the courts being in a single building and actually on a single wing of the building, and they pool their court reporters rather than having them assigned to specific courts in an effort to spread that resource as far as possible. The self-help service cuts. This was perhaps the worst part of the story that I heard from Ms. Turner. In 2009, this court had, to quote Kim Turner, the Rolls-Royce of self-help clinics. The court had formed a nonprofit foundation to support its health self center. Their center was off-site, had 9 full-time employees, including 2 attorneys. The center was open 5 days a week from 8 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. These resources allowed staff to sit down with self-represented litigants, explain the forms and procedures, help them fill out the forms, and provide service on a step-by-step basis, dramatically increasing access to justice for those in need of help. This service was not only valuable to the litigants they served, but also to the court, to the clerk's office and the courtroom staff once the litigants got to court. In 2010, due to budgetary constraints, the court was forced to dissolve the nonprofit and move the self-help clinic back to the courthouse. Their self-help clinic has continued to absorb budget reductions since 2010. It now operates on reduced hours with a total staff of 3, including only 1 attorney. In terms of infrastructure, they're in dire need of replacing their antiquated Cobalt County-based case management system, and they're in process of migrating to a new SQL system. Ms. Turner explained that the move is expensive, about $1.7 million to acquire and migrate, but the new system will only cost $300,000 a year. Currently, they're paying $1 million a year to the county for the service from the old system. In terms of security issues, The Marin County Superior Court has an unfortunate history in regard to courthouse security, and these issues remain a high priority concern. In recent years, the court in 2007 was able to upgrade security screening so that now everyone who enters the hallway where the courtrooms are located go through screening. However, other court functions, court administration, the civil clerk's office, jury services, and the court's IT department are not similarly protected. They share space in other areas where the county government offices are, and the county government offices are have been resistant to setting up similar screening. As I said, this remains a concern. Additionally, as stunningly beautiful as their Frank Lloyd Wright designed courthouse is, it has significant issues with an enormous number of access points from the outside directly into court areas, often with only glass or glass doors providing separation and security. In terms of positives, the bench is strong, it's hardworking, it's committed. Their CEO is skilled, creative, and innovative. They've been very active in seeking efficiencies where they can to offset the budget cuts. And in particular, I want to mention the following efficiencies that they've been involved in because I think they're actually quite interesting and certainly the very least food for thought for courts that are able to do similar things. Many of the post-judgment activities and misdemeanor cases have been shifted to the clerk's office. For example, progress reports on completion, proof of completion of court-ordered classes, volunteer work, AA, NA attendance, things of that nature. Also, re-referral to such activities are now done quickly and efficiently at the clerk's window rather than requiring a court appearance. Second, misdemeanants who've been OR'd from jail are given a date to attend a video arraignment where they're given a choice of walking down the hall that day and resolving their case as a pro per if they wish with an offer from the DA or alternatively being referred to the public defender or counsel of choice and a court date 30 days out. And this process has resulted in a dramatic reduction in the number of cases that have required more than the single arraignment court appearance. These two innovations together have allowed the court to get by with only five criminal courts at this point where previously that work was done by seven, and it certainly helped the court absorb its loss in bench officers. In the civil area, the court's trying a new process with a private mediation entity, Resolution Remedies, where that group has agreed to take the 12 hardest-to-settle civil cases that the court has and to try and resolve them on a pro bono basis. Similarly, in regard to limited civil cases and unlawful detainer cases, they have efforts underway with private mediators to offer 2 hours of free mediation, again, in an effort to reduce the court's caseload. And thus far, it appears that this is working well. The court is working with the local bar association to set up a civil discovery facilitator program. The court has looked for efficiencies elsewhere also. The court no longer pays the county for postage and shipping, but instead has found a new vendor that's much cheaper. They no longer rely on the county for janitorial service, but have hired a less expensive private vendor. And they've embarked on a new jury questionnaire process. Once a questionnaire is completed by a prospective juror, the court scans it and makes it available online to the attorneys and the judge. There are security features with that. But this process has saved them money that previously spent on paper, copy machine costs, and storage. In conclusion, the Marin County Superior Court is comprised of strong, smart, and efficient judges and staff who are committed to carrying out their duties to provide the best possible access to justice that the current circumstances permit. It appears to me that they're doing a very good job of that, and they're to be commended for their hard work and dedication. In sum, of all the things that I've done on the Judicial Council so far, these court visits, I think, have been the high point for me. It's an absolutely wonderful opportunity to get out and see our colleagues and how they do it differently, and I was very well received at both courts. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Jacobson. Last on the liaison reports, Judge Rosenberg.
Since I'm last, I'll be brief. This visit was the low point for me. No, I'm just kidding. Actually, it was a little depressing hearing some of the challenges. But I visited the Solano Superior Court on April 19th. They're located in Fairfield. Presiding Judge Paul Beeman was very gracious with time. I visited with the 15 judges and assistants and commissioners. Brian Taylor, the CEO, was there. It was interesting. I spent almost all my time responding to their questions. I just opened it up, and they had a lot of questions and concerns. 95% of the questions and concerns related to money, finances. They just don't fathom how they will be able to function in future years with a 1% reserve. It's kind of a non-starter for them. It just doesn't compute. And they predict that they will be having to furlough employees because the options have run out for them. There's no more money in reserves. They don't anticipate any backfills, so they've run out of options. They were very interested in the new budget allocation methodology that Judge Earl's working group had developed. We spent some time chatting about that. They have they're a fairly small court, but they have a vacancy for a judicial position, which they tell me is the oldest vacancy on the Superior Court in the state of California. They were wondering when that would be filled. I told them I have no idea. That's out of my jurisdiction. They were concerned about the assigned judges program and the viability of that program in future years because they do rely on that program quite heavily, as I know many courts do. I told them, to the best of my knowledge, that program will continue because courts rely on it. They also have a courthouse project that they desperately need. Their current courthouse in Fairfield is very institutional. It sort of reminded me of military barracks in some respects. I'm sure it's functional for their needs, but it's not really user-friendly for the public, in my opinion. In any event, we had a very good discussion. As I say, 95% of the questions and concerns related to the financial picture of the branch. Thank you.
Thank you, Judge Rosenberg.